Ben Overby's first affirmation, May 21st, 1999.
Have a brief opening comment about some general matters. Let me first of all say thanks to the congregation here at North Dixon for your hospitality, for allowing us to come and to hold this discussion here, for the interest that the folks that have been here have shown. We appreciate that. And the good attitude, very glad to see you. Appreciate both prayers, both nights, and that we implore God that we might be open-minded. There is certainly nothing wrong with being open to great certainty. Now, that doesn't mean we have to be tolerant but to just everything. That just simply means that we're open to greater certitude. If we come to a discussion like this with that attitude, I think we can leave here blessed because of it. Need to apologize to you for not having a jacket on. I left the house and forgot it. I told Pat earlier that probably there would be some folks who would have to take greater issue with me for not having the jacket on than the position I take. Sometimes the way we think about preachers and their attire and so forth, but I apologize for not being as formal as perhaps this situation would suggest it ought to be. Also, a brief apology for my visual aids. I did not make them large enough, and several people have commented on that. I appreciate your constructive criticism. I'll try to remember that for the next debate. In fact, I will remember that for the next debate. It's the first time for me to ever do anything like this, so I'm learning as I go along. Appreciate Ron Gilbert, my moderator, who has helped me for several years in studying a variety of issues and has certainly spent many hours challenging me and me challenging him on this issue, and Terry Pendergrass for being here to help with the transparency. Having said that, tonight it's my job to affirm the following. The Bible teaches that if a woman is put away for a reason other than fornication and her husband marries another, then she, the put-away woman, may marry another. I will begin to affirm that, or at least get around to the main points of that at the end of this speech. I'm going to, maybe this is a little bit unorthodox. I want to, because I think if we don't talk just a little bit more, if I don't try to get into your mind what's in my mind about these terms that we struggled so much with last night, then the rest of the evening would just be more confusion. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the terms. Let me first say that Brother Pat last night said that we agreed on unscriptural divorce, and we don't agree to that. And if I said anything that didn't apply to that, I didn't mean to. We agree to what the terms are or what is required for a person to be divorced and then remarried, but the second debate obviously shows that we don't agree to what an unscriptural divorce is. Pat's affirmative last night. Pat had the job that I'll have this evening of proving his point, proving his case. And he put it before us as proof, Luke 16, verse 18b, Matthew 19, verse 9. Our difference, of course, does center around, I think those of you who were here last night see how much it does revolve around, the meaning of the word divorce. And Pat, though, keeps insisting that the meaning really is not all that important. And I just want us to think about this some more. Pat put my definition of divorce in Matthew 19, and I did this a bit last night in my last speech. Let's put Pat's definition, as I understand it so far, as it concerns divorce, in Matthew 19:9. Now, if I understand what Pat has said, the word put away, as it's rendered in the King James Version, with the Greek word apoluo, is or should be where it's appropriate to interpret that or translate that as divorce. I'd say that's okay too, depending on what we mean by divorce. Pat says that divorce is something legal in Matthew 19 and in Luke chapter 16, that divorce, that apoluo, is something legal. Whoever legally divorces his wife then, except fornication, and marries another, commits adultery. That's if I understand your understanding of this word correctly, here's what we have. Whoever legally divorces his wife, except for fornication, and marries another, commits adultery. Now, a logical deduction from that is this. All legal divorces that are for fornication permit the innocent to remarry. Now, that means the legal document does have to say for fornication. All legal divorces that are for fornication permit the innocent party to remarry. I think what that says is that we are in the hands of secular judges to determine for us when we are free to remarry and when we're not. What if Fred files legal divorce against Ethel for fornication, but he can't prove it to the judge? He saw her with his own eyes. He didn't get a Polaroid of the action, so he can't go to court and he can't prove it. But he knows that she's guilty of fornication. He goes to the judge. The judge does not permit it. Pat's definition restricts this man's capacity to remarry. You understand that? Pat says it's legal divorce. So whoever legally divorces for fornication can remarry. And if the man goes and he knows that she's guilty of fornication, but he can't prove it to the judge, Pat has said by his definition that he cannot remarry. Now, I'm stating a conclusion with that. I don't mean to speak for you. I'm saying that's an implication. And Pat can tell us whether or not he actually believes that or not. If it's only the case that the sequence must be followed, fornication, and then legal divorce, and then marry another, and the legal divorce does not have to be on the grounds of fornication, then I ask Pat to prove that. I ask Pat to prove to us that if his interpretation is correct, all legal divorces that are fornication permit the innocent party to remarry, and if we've got to follow that scenario, fornication, and then legal divorce, and then remarry, if it doesn't have to state fornication, then I'm just asking you to prove that. I'm asking you to prove to us why it does not have to state fornication in the document. And I'll just keep reminding you of the plain statement, whoever legally divorces his wife, fornication, can remarry. Now, my interpretation, as I put it forward, of divorce, permits this man in this situation to remarry. Fred knows his wife cheated. He goes to the judge. The judge says, no, you can't have a divorce for fornication. You cannot have a divorce for the cause of fornication. I'm going to give it to you for irreconcilable differences, let's say. This man, according to the way I understand the word, is free to remarry because the word divorce should be understood, I believe, as an action of repudiating one's past. If you cannot get a piece of paper that states that man approves of the repudiation, it does not matter. So what if the judge doesn't believe you? If you know that your wife cheated, and the best you can do is get a piece of paper that says for irreconcilable differences, what difference does it make? Repudiation is an action. Repudiation is an action. It's going to be right or wrong on God's terms. That is for fornication and not if it's not for fornication. All man has to do is give permission for the legal bond to end. God will sever the biblical bond whether man agrees with him or not. And provided man is given the civil permission for the legal bond to end for some reason, if God says, if God is aware that it's for fornication, the bond ends. I think we're overcomplicating the word divorce. Putting away is an action. It is. Again, going one's own way. It's leaving. It's losing. It's loosing. It is separated. Some cultures demand this action be approved by man. If this person is going to be legally contracted to another. Some cultures like ours demand that this putting away action, if a person is going to marry somebody else, has got to be done legally so that person can be free to remarry. Man's dissolution of a legal marriage may or may not have an impact on the bond. Man can say it's over, and God will, in some situations, in most situations in our society, when you think about the grounds of divorce, God will say you're still husband and wife. If man dissolves the legal marriage, yet God says the two are still bound, that is, they're still husband and wife, then the bond still remains, and it can be broken, either through the death of the spouse, or biblical grounds now for putting away. And since it's an action, and not just some legal thing, it can be done through other forms of apolua. So notice here, I've tried to blow this up a little bit. It may not be enough yet for you, but Pat can see it from up here, and maybe he can respond to this a bit when he comes up. You'll find in every one of these passages the word apolua, and I just would like for Pat to show us where it is seen in any of those passages to mean something legal. Where that word means something legal. And not a verb, not the action, of leaving, separating, repudiating, disowning, loosing, and so forth, where it means something legal. Now, I know what the legal terminology is. I know what the legal word is. I just would like for Pat to show us, if he wants to respond to that, all of these different scriptures that use this term apoluo, that Pat says is divorce, and that divorce is something legal. Why these folks have it translated that way or understood it that way, and maybe that would help us. And I'll just turn that off. Well, I'll give it back. I'm going to keep asking you to repeat it. Come look at it. We should not confuse God's intended meaning of an action as something defined by our culture. Divorce, according to God, is sending away, departing, repudiating. That's what the word means in Matthew 19:9. That's why the scholars who translated the King James Version translated it putting away. Divorce, according to the general use of the term in our culture, is legal dissolution. That's how we use the term. Legal dissolution was the writing of divorcement in the New Testament, not the putting away. God is against the action of man and woman stopping to cleave to each other. That's an action that can happen with or without this legal terminology, biblion apostasion, or writing of divorce. Which word in Matthew chapter 19 describes the action of putting away, and which word describes the legal aspect of it? Whoever dismisses from his house, this is the way that we could look at Matthew 19, whoever dismisses from his house his wife, not in fornication, and marries another, commits adultery. Whoever marries her who has been dismissed from the house commits adultery. It is an action wherein the man says, I don't claim you as my wife any longer. I disown you. That's an action that may or may not be approved by God. If it's approved by God and the culture demands some written documentation of the action, then the person is only free to remarry after he provides society with the paperwork. If the culture does not demand the documentation, then the person is free to remarry after the action and without further formality. A writing of divorcement is then incidental to God's law. It only affects how a person culturally legitimizes his status as a single man. As a single man. If he dismisses this woman from his house without God's approval, then obtains the correct paperwork, he is as bound to her as he was before the paperwork. And the Bible shows that. The Bible will teach that. If the divorce is not on the grounds of fornication, they are as bound to each other before the courthouse as they are after the courthouse, or after as they are before. Why? The action was not approved of by God. What action? The legal documentation? No, the culture approved that. It's the dismissal from the house, the disowning, the putting away, the departing. If God does not approve of the separating of the two, then they will be bound to each other until one dies or until there's a biblical apoluo. And this could very well happen after the writing of divorce. Now, Pat, last night, would say, now, let's take his definition, dismissal from the house, apply to the front and the back portion of the verse. If dismissed in the first part, if the man has already dismissed the woman from the house, and not fornication, and then he goes out and he marries somebody, how can she dismiss him? And would accuse me of equivocation if I say dismiss in one sense and maybe repudiation in another. Well, we can do that because this is a verb that has many different senses, or it's an action that can be performed in a variety of ways. Ex leaves, he gets a writing of divorcement, and then he goes out and he fornicates. Why can repudiate him or disown him by giving him a piece of paper, a writing of divorcement that says, I'll no longer stay with you? He may have apoluoed her by dismissing her from the house. That's one sense of the verb. And then she turns around, if she can counter, if she can reciprocate, if he commits fornication, it's proper to say that she turns around and disowns him. Now, Pat was successful in his affirmation, I believe, inasmuch as the Pharisees were in what they may have affirmed in Matthew chapter 12. You want to turn there again? I'm going to say this to make this point clear before I move on. Pat's proof, two statements. Pat, remember that, keep that in your mind. His proof last night for us to accept and believe his proposition was two statements. Luke 16, verse 18b, and Matthew chapter 19. The Pharisees would, if you suppose there's a debate in Matthew chapter 12, like the debate we're having, and suppose that Jesus or one of his disciples comes to the podium and then you have a Pharisee, that they're going to argue over what can be done on the Sabbath day. The Pharisees rise to the podium and they say, I've learned that it's unlawful to pick food and eat it on the Sabbath day. Proof? Two scriptures. Leviticus 23, verse 3. And put with that, Exodus chapter 16. Not lawful to work and certainly not lawful to pick food or to collect food on the Sabbath day. One of our Lord's disciples might respond. Jesus did respond to that. The day they ate the showbread, the priest worked. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. The Sabbath is made for man and not man for the Sabbath. The Pharisees rise again and they say, we object. We hear what you said, but look, you've got two plain statements. No work on the Sabbath, and certainly no collecting food on the Sabbath. And yesterday, last evening, I tried to, in three speeches, put across the point that, and I believe we agree to this, that after an unscriptural, or after a divorce which is not fornication, that the husband and wife are still banned, according to Romans chapter 7. They're still husband and wife, even after the divorce of marriage. I tried to point that out. And if bound, they certainly can be loose, and I pointed that out. The innocent is in a position then to counter and become the subject of Matthew chapter 19. Divorce is either, this writing of divorcement, this legal divorcement, is either accepted by God or it's not. If not accepted, then the two are still banned. If one has sex with the other after the writing of divorcement, and the divorcement was not fornication, then that person is committing fornication. And he's still bound, let's say Fred is still bound to Ethel. And if he is, then Ethel can repudiate him on the grounds of fornication. He can only disown that which is yours. He continues to be hers. Fred puts her away, not fornication. He marries somebody else. He's still her property in God's eyes. He's still her husband. He's still her man. And she can, because of that, disown him. Matthew chapter 19, verse 9 does not deal with the question, what if the guilty party puts away the innocent? Doesn't deal with that directly. It's kind of like Leviticus chapter 23 and Exodus chapter 16, not dealing with the question, what if you're hungry on the Sabbath? If you look at Matthew chapter 19, Luke chapter 16, it doesn't deal specifically with what if you're bound to this person who puts you away, and not fornication, and then your spouse dies. Matthew chapter 19, Luke chapter 16 don't deal with that. It does not deal with the question, what if we're still biblically bound and my spouse remarries? Pat says, after all of this, sorry, the word's still saved in Luke 16 and Matthew chapter 19. If you marry her and put away, then you commit fornication. Like the Pharisees would say, after Jesus' argument, well, we got your argument. But still, the word says here, Leviticus chapter 23, no word. And Exodus chapter 16, especially, no taking up food. A disciple might respond like Jesus did in Matthew chapter 12, verse 7. If you would just stop looking at Leviticus chapter 23, verse 3, and Exodus chapter 16, Exodus chapter 16, then perhaps you would not condemn the guilty.
The verse makes it 16.
The entire chapter, the context of it. The picking up the man from the Sabbath.
Okay.
So, Jesus might say that. He did say, if you had understood what Hosea 6 verse 6 means, you would not have condemned the guiltless. And I believe this, that if we could just get away from just those particular words in Luke 16 and Matthew chapter 19 and pay attention maybe to a little bit of what I'm trying to get across, then we might not condemn the guiltless. The Lord was not able to convince the Pharisees. All I would ask folks to do is to study the scriptures for yourself, listen to Pat's very, very good and I think capable way of describing his position. Mine may not be as capable. I'll do the best I can. And just go home, study the scriptures, determine for yourself what is true. I was going to belabor that point some more, but I'm about out of time. Let me just get on to my affirmative. How much time am I? Two minutes. Three question test for everybody. If you don't want to write your answer down, it's easy to reform, so you might just remember this, the answer to these questions in your mind. Three questions. True or false? If an innocent woman puts her husband away for fornication, then she, the put away woman, is free to remarry. If an innocent woman puts her husband away for fornication, then she, the put-away woman, is free to remarry. Question number two, true or false? If a woman's husband is guilty of fornication, then she, his innocent wife, may put him away from fornication. Somebody would say, well, these are no-brainers, and they're not. I know they're not hard questions, but if a woman's husband is guilty of fornication, then she, his innocent wife, may put him away from fornication. True or false? Don't try and determine, well, what do you mean by this, what do you mean by that? Just the way that the question's written, if you forgot that this debate, in the context of this debate, true or false? True or false, if a man puts away his wife, not fornication, he marries another, then he, the first woman's husband, is guilty of fornication. If a man puts away his wife, not fornication, and marries another, then he, the first woman's husband, is guilty of fornication. And we'll come back to those questions when I present a technical argument that I believe that Pat will be able to look at and really do some serious scientific, if you will, evaluation of it to determine whether or not it's valid. And I believe to find it's valid quickly, but whether or not it's sound, I'm sure that that issue with it. Just wanted to get across this evening a little more clarification. I hope that I've been able to do that to some degree. What I mean by divorce, putting away, and to also make a point that, look, the Baptist can take John 3:16 and over again say, if you believe that you're saved, you don't need baptism, you don't need this and that, and they never look at another scripture, and you would never be anywhere in the discussion. So, set my time. Oh, I'm sorry. Better go on.
Pat Donahue, denial number one.
I also want to make a few comments about the debate. I appreciate everybody coming and the church for being willing to host this. Appreciate Ben being willing to do it. I believe Ben is a very good debater. Here's why I say that. A lot of people judge debaters based upon whether or not they know debate tactics and how to use them wisely. He doesn't use debate tactics. He just gets up here and responds to what I say and then tries to present his case, proof for his case. That's what I like. There's no use for using all kinds of stuff like, well, you probably notice this in debates, when somebody's in the affirmative, they'll always accuse, or in the negative, they'll always accuse the other guy. He thinks he's in the affirmative, he's supposed to be in the negative. And then the next night, they'll say, he's acting like he's in the negative, he's supposed to be in the affirmative. All that is debate tactics to try to hide everything. He's not talking about any of that, he's just talking about the issue, trying to respond to it, and I appreciate that. It's just discussion, we're trying to get it, we're not wasting our time with debate tactics. It's just an in-depth Bible study. As I mentioned last night, that's the way both of us view it. Appreciate you coming.
Let me begin by what Ben started with. In passages like Matthew 19:9, for example, and the other ones like Luke 16:18, he asked me, do I believe that put away is equivalent to legal divorce? The answer is yes. And I don't mean by that, it's maybe hair splitting to you, Ben, but it's not to me. I don't mean by that the writing of divorce or the bill of divorce. That is just a piece of paper that describes what they do. The actual divorce, though, in our country, is a legal thing that you must go through. And I believe it was in Jesus' society. I believe that what you have to do to get a divorce is what is the accepted practice by law in that country, in that society. In some countries, there may be nothing you have to do except jump over the broom the wrong way. We talked about that last night. But in our society, divorce is a legal thing that you do. And then the paper describes what happened. Now, the paper may or may not be accurate. Fornication, I do not believe, has to be on the paper because the paper may not accurately describe what the divorce was for. For example, in some states you have a no-fault divorce. That's the only thing you can do. There is not allowed to put the cause on the paper. But if the person is truly doing it for fornication, that doesn't matter. They're truly doing it for fornication. Jesus didn't say in Matthew 19:9 that you had to get the cause on the paper. What he said was, is you have to do it for this reason. So that's what's important. But he did say, you have to be the one to put away your wife. You have to be the one to divorce her if she commits fornication, not the other way around. And in our society, divorce includes, in our society, I would say primarily includes, the legal action. That is the action that God hates in our society, that legal thing. Okay? And so he must do that. But he doesn't necessarily have to have fornication written on the paper, because the paper might not accurately represent what happens. You see? The person might, for example, lie about it. He might really be doing it for fornication and then have on the paper for some other reason and it might be a bold-faced lie. He'd need to repent of lying, but the divorce would still be scriptural. But like I say, in a no-fault state, you don't even have a place to put the cause on the paper. So put away does equal the legal divorce in our society. And he asked me out of some passages, where is that true? Put up number 18, David. That's before, I'm sorry, we'll put 13 next. Sorry, I got another order. Here's why I believe that in our society, put away involves the legal, because all of these guys define put away as divorce. And that's the English word, which they say means the same as put away in our King James Version. And if you look up the English word divorce in the English dictionary, we'll talk about legal. I believe that we all here know, including Ben, that divorce in our society involves the legal. I thought everybody knew that. Now put up number 13. You know, Ben doesn't have any problem understanding that about marriage. When we talked about what, if the legal doesn't really matter, then why can't a man and a woman just shack up? Why do they have to go through the legal process at all? Ben knows and agrees, he knows, that if two young people have never been married before, if they want to get married in our country, not necessarily in every country, in the broom country, all they got to do is jump over a broom together, but they have to do that. In our country, they have to go through something legal. And if they don't, Ben, would you agree with me? They're living together, they're shacking up together, or do you think it's just fine? No, see, they have to go through something legal. Why is it so easy to understand that marriage in our country demands something legal, but divorce does not? You know what divorce really means? It just means undoing the marriage. Whatever it took to get married, it means undoing that. That's just the opposite. It's an antonym of marriage. And so if it takes something legal to get married, it necessarily takes something legal to get divorced. If the society dictates that. Can you tell me why that's not true, Ben? Why do you believe that the first one, the marriage, has to involve the legal and not the divorce? Okay? Now, one reason that this is not putting God's law above man's law, the fact that we have to go through something legal, and that's having something to do with man, is for the same reason you have to obey the speed limit. God never set any speed limits for any road that I know about, but man does. He said in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13, that we're to obey every ordinance, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. We know that means we're to obey the laws of the land unless it conflicts with the laws of God. Just like the man sets the speed limit, he sets the procedures for divorce in our society. We have to go by that law, just like he set the procedures for marriage when he said that involves something legal. So God expects us for marriage and divorce to go through what the laws of the land dictate, and in both cases, in our society, it involves something legal. In the broom society, they have to jump over a broom one way to get married together, and to get a divorce, the man has to jump backwards over that broom to get a divorce. That's silly, it may not be a real case, but it makes the point that in that society, to get married, they have to jump the broom. And to get divorced, they have to jump backwards over the broom. They have to. Now put up number two. But as he mentioned, that I emphasized last time, we do disagree on the definition of divorce, but it really is not critical to this debate. It is not critical to this debate because I can take every single definition he's given for divorce in this debate, and I would say there are two or three of them, and stick them in here and show that his proposition is incorrect. For example, one definition he gives for divorce is send her out of the house. He gave that last night. Let's put that in here, okay? Well, let's first put mine first. Legal divorce. That's mine, okay? Whoever legally divorces his wife in the USA, that's what we're talking about, and marries another commits adultery. And whoever legally marries her that is legally divorced from her husband commits adultery. Now, that proves my proposition from last night. But let's stick him and his in there, okay? Whoever sends his wife out of the house and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her that has been sent out of the house by her husband commits adultery. Well, there you have it. We stick his definition for divorce in there, and it's still adultery. It still means that if a man put away his wife, whatever that means, whether it means a legal divorce, or sending her out of the house, or repudiation, or disowning, whatever it means, Ben, if he does that to his wife, and then he commits fornication, he remarries another, she may not remarry. That's what that says. Now, I patterned my proposition last night after this verse, and his proposition tonight is just the opposite of that. Notice the part. He puts away his wife, and he marries another. He's divorced her unscriptural. He's married again. He's committing adultery. May she remarry? Jesus says no. Even after she's been divorced unscripturally, the bond is still there, Ben. Even after he commits adultery, Ben, the bond is still there because the Bible says she commits adultery if she remarries. And that's just like my place. My proposition, the man divorces his wife unscripturally, he marries another, therefore he's committing adultery, but still, the first man's wife may not remarry. Now, he brought up, and this was a lot in the last night, put up number 25. I asked him, how could there be a second putting away? If I divorce my wife, and that's a legal divorce, I believe. But whatever it means, if I divorce my wife, let's say I send her out of the house. Now I go out to commit fornication, I marry Kim. How can she divorce me? I've already sent her out of the house. We're not in the house together. How is she going to send me out of the house? Or in the case of a legal divorce, I've already legally divorced her. How is she going to, now that I'm committing fornication after the fact, how is she going to legally divorce me? She can't. So he tried to explain how you can have a second putting away. He said, and he said this last night with a chart, she can counter. What Ben, I think, what he's getting confused on is that Ben doesn't understand that we marry and divorce, and God binds and loses. And that when a person divorces Ben, the divorce is the breaking up or the terminating of the marriage, not the bond, Ben. Divorce is the termination of the marriage, not the bond. And you admit last night that marriage and bond are different. Here's what he said last night. I'm not sure it's an exact quote, but it's close. Yes, divorce includes the writing of divorcement in our society. But does that break the bond? I would say no, not under scripture divorce. He says, if not, they can still put away. No, it can't, because the marriage is done. See, putting away is the opposite of marriage, not the opposite of bond. Once the marriage is gone, once there's really been a divorce, there is nothing left to put away. The bond has nothing to do with putting away in this case. Putting away undoes the marriage, not the bond. Now, I asked him a couple of questions. I said, if a man puts away his wife for reasons other than fornication, are they still married in the sense that the New Testament uses the word married? He said no. If I divorce my wife unscripturally, are we still married? He said no, that's what I say. You see, we're still bound, but we're not married. I said, are they divorced in the sense the New Testament uses the word divorce? He said yes. He said that. If I divorce my wife unscripturally for reason other than fornication, we're not married anymore. We're not still married. We're divorced. He admits to that. Ben is putting a second divorce in the passage. But Matthew 19:9 and the other verses, they only have one Ben. There is only one divorce in that passage. Where did you find the second putting away? In Luke, Matthew 19:9, whoever puts away their wife except the victim of fornication, marries another, commits adultery. And whoever marries the one put away commits adultery. Do you find in any of those passages the second putting away that he's talking about? No, there's only one. Whether there's two types, scriptural for fornication, not scriptural for any other reason, but there's only one divorce. His second divorce is not even in there. What Ben is talking about, after I divorced my wife unscripturally, then remarried and committed adultery, after Fred does that to Ethel, as we said last night, he's talking about a mental putting away. Ethel could just say in her mind, well, now he's committing fornication, and I've already been divorced, but I will mentally repudiate the marriage. You know, that kind of divorce, nobody to speak of would know about. And Fred divorced Ethel, and then Fred remarried and committed adultery. Now, Ethel's going to mentally divorce Fred, okay, for fornication. Who's going to know about that? First of all, Fred probably won't ever know about it. The judge won't know about it. The society won't know about it. Who will know about that? How can anybody prove that it ever occurred? It's just something in her mind. It's just some chemicals floating around in her head. Ben doesn't understand that putting away or divorcing breaks the marriage, not the bond. When people get an unscriptural divorce, they are really divorced. Really divorced, even though they're still bound. That's why it's a sin. When I shoot him and he's dead, he's really dead. It was unscriptural what I did, but that doesn't make it alive, him alive. He is actually dead. And it's a sin when I do that. People marry in divorce, only God binds and loses. Now notice that Romans 7, 2 and 3. Let's turn and read that since we haven't read it tonight, and it's an important passage. Notice that Romans 7, 2 and 3 shows that the marriage and the bond are not the same. Paul says, therefore, the woman which hath a husband is bound by the law of her husband so long as he lives. But if the husband be dead, she is loose from the law of her husband. So then if while her husband liveth, she be married to another man, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is loose. She is free from that law. So that she is no adulteress, though she be married to another man. What we have here is a woman that's married to a man, bound to him as long as he lives. Then she marries another. Either it's bigamy or it's an unscriptural divorce law. There we don't know. We'll cover either text. Okay? Now she's married to the second, bound to the first. You see, marriage and bond is not the same. She's married to the second, but she's certainly not bound to the second. That's adultery. Marriage and the bond are two different things. When you divorce, you break the marriage, it's completely gone, there's nothing left to put away, the bond still remains. Notice that Matthew 5:32 shows that when an unscriptural divorce takes place, the parties are really divorced. Look at that, Matthew 5:32. Jesus said, "Whosoever shall put away his wife, save for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, commit adultery." It doesn't say that they're divorced, but not really divorced. Divorced, but they're still married, so somebody can still put somebody away at the same time. It says that he divorces her unscripturally. She is divorced. They are divorced. Now, raise it up just a little bit. Now, God does sever the bond when the man puts away his wife for fornication on the part of the innocent party woman. But an unscriptural divorce is a divorce, a full and real divorce. They are not married anymore, men. And here's the critical thing. There is no marriage left for the innocent party to put away. The marriage is already gone. Okay? Put up number 16. And so we have a difference in the marriage and bond, and I already went through that. We read this verse, Romans 7, 2, and 3. We pointed out that the woman of this passage is bound to the first, but married to the second. Not bound to the second. So married to the second, but not bound to the second. Again, showing the difference in the marriage and the bond. And the divorce is complete when it breaks up the marriage. There's nothing left to put away. Just because there's a bond still left, that has nothing been whatsoever to do with putting away. Just because I'm still bound to my wife doesn't mean I can put her away. Put away is the opposite of marriage. We have to be married to be able to put her away. Okay? Maybe you can get number 24 up next, but I want to try to answer his question. Point out to me the second one.
The second one I read.
The second one you read was number 2. Okay. That was a little confusing to me, so it was hard for me to get it. The first one, I'm putting in my own words, if a woman divorces for fornication a man, is she free to remarry? True. The third one, if a man divorces not for fornication and remarries, is he guilty of adultery? True. And let me see if I can get this one right. If a woman's husband is guilty of fornication, then she, his innocent wife, may put him away for fornication. That's true. Now, we can quibble about the words husband and wife then. Okay? Different people think it means different things. Okay? But what I mean by husband and wife there, they were still married. Okay? Sometimes people are bound. Okay? And some folks like to refer to that as they're still husband and wife. I don't particularly use that terminology. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but it's just a matter of terminology. Okay? What I meant by that is that they were still married. Okay? So if they're not still married, you can't divorce them, because divorce is the opposite of marriage. Now, if you refer to husband and wife a different way than me, that's fine. But remember the way I define it, as somebody that's still married. Not necessarily that somebody that's still bound, but not married. All right, number 24. This is an argument that, sorry, Bill, but Bill Gates, I have to give him credit for this argument. He told it to me today. It's a good argument, but I didn't use it last night. I hadn't ever really thought of it. But let's look at Matthew 5:32. In Matthew 5:32, Jesus said, "Whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery." Okay? Causes her to commit adultery. By the way, Ben, if you want to, if you have time to get up here, tell me if that's a sin to cause somebody to commit adultery. If you have the time, you think of it. Is that a sin? Whatever that means, is a sin to cause somebody to commit adultery. That verse. Is it? Okay. So the man puts away his wife. That's for the next debate, by the way. The man puts away his wife, not fornication, causes her to commit adultery. Now, I want to present this case to you, Ben. Did you know, according to your position, well, let me just read the way I've got it. 99 times out of 100, the man in this particular case will have sexual relations. I may be exaggerating the number, but it's a high number. Will have sexual relations before the woman. Because this man is divorcing his wife unscripturally. He doesn't care about doing what's right, and chances are she does, okay? So he's divorcing her. He doesn't care about doing what's right. He's divorcing her for the wrong reason. She does. Who's likely to have to commit fornication first? Well, the man. He doesn't care about doing what's right. I said 99 times out of 100. Maybe it's only 9 out of 10. But a great majority of the time, he's going to commit fornication first. And so if she remarries, or she won't commit adultery then. So why would Jesus say that if a man divorces his wife unscripturally, he's going to cause her to commit adultery, when 99 times out of 100, according to Ben's reasoning, she wouldn't commit adultery because he would commit fornication first, she could mentally divorce him, and remarry and never commit adultery. Explain that, Ben. Now, that's not according to my position. But according to his position, if a man divorces his wife unscripturally and remarries her, even just commits fornication outside of marriage, she has the right to remarry. Therefore, when she remarries, it won't be adultery. That's going to happen 99 times out of 100, Ben. So why would Jesus say when he divorces her unscripturally, he causes her to commit adultery, when 99 times out of 100, she won't be committing adultery? She'll have a right to have a husband, because if her first husband will go out and commit adultery and give her that right. It doesn't make any sense. The only way this verse really makes any sense is if, when he divorces her, just like Luke 16:18 said, even if he remarries, it's still wrong, it's still adultery for her to remarry. Now, if that's the case, we can all understand why Jesus said if he divorces her unscripturally, he's going to cause her to commit adultery. Because, just because he commits adultery, that doesn't free her, so she will be tempted severely to break the celibacy that will be required for that period of time. Since Jesus said that the man does cause a woman to commit adultery, my opponent's position that she is free to repair after the man's subsequent adultery must be wrong. How much time do we have? Next chart. These are some three things from last night. Matthew 19, verse 9, if you take what is implied, it says if you divorce your wife except for fornication, married others, you commit adultery. What is implied is that if you divorce your wife for fornication, you may remarry without committing adultery. You marry another, do not commit adultery. So what we learn from that, for a man not to commit adultery when he remarries, three things we learn. His first wife must have committed fornication. You can't divorce her for fornication unless she's done it. Secondly, he must be the one to put her away. Because for him to marry and not commit fornication, it says that he has to put away his wife for fornication. Not just that she's committed it, but also that he divorced her for that. He has to be the one to put her away. Also, the fornication must be the cause of adultery. Okay? Now, let me repeat for the purposes of this debate, emphasize, underscore, number two. It basically says that for him not to commit adultery when he marries another, he must have divorced his wife. He must have done it for fornication, but he must have divorced his wife. Whatever divorce means, Ben, he must have done that. In your case, when Fred divorces Ethel and Fred remarries, Ethel has not divorced Fred, and therefore she cannot remarry. Put up the next chart. There are only two ways to break the bond. Death and divorce for fornication. Now, our example case last night was Fred divorced Ethel unscripturally, not fornication. Fred remarried Jane, I believe. That doesn't matter. The case is, can Ethel remarry now that Fred is committing adultery? I say no. He says yes. But in that case, neither one of these conditions have been met. But one of these conditions has to be met for the bond to be broken and her to be able to remarry without committing adultery. Fred is still alive, so we don't have the death of the spouse. She did not divorce her spouse for fornication. Instead, Fred divorced Ethel. So therefore, she is still bound to Fred even after his adultery, and therefore it's adultery if she remarries. Thank you very much.